B-Pod Studios.
Noah says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Give Sarge a Sarge salute from the Town Fair Tire Studio. Felger and Maz here on 98.5, a Sports Hub simulcast, NBC Sports Boston. Once again, for what feels like the 23rd consecutive Friday, no Felger, no Maz. So you have me, Jim Murray, in the a-hole chair, Ted Johnson in the Maz chair, and the warm voice who spits hot fire, Matt McCarthy, in my normal spot, providing the updates and chiming in as well. I'm beginning to really like this group, by the way, especially these Fridays with Ted. Mm-hmm. I think it's now, I know I was being facetious there at the beginning, but I think it's our third consecutive Friday that that little smug shrimp Mitch album can have his Tuesdays with Maury. We have Fridays with Ted. I really like it. And it's also an agenda-free Friday. They're driven by the Bernardi Auto Group, where car buying is always agenda-free. Choose from new Acuras, Audis, Hondas, Toyotas, Volvos, and over 500 pre-owned vehicles. Bernardi for now, Bernardi for life. Bernardi Auto Group. .com. So an agenda-free Friday means you, the people, send us in the direction that you'd like us to go in at 617-779-0985. In the meantime, while we wait for you, we have our opening takes. Who wants to go first? Ted McTakey, who?
Being Felger and Maz, I will defer my opening take to Ted Johnson.
Okay, thank you, Matthew. All right, boys, you know what? I'm a huge, huge fan of this show, Hard Knocks. Everybody, it's been around, gosh, I want to say at least a decade now, maybe a little bit more. Hard Knocks, every August, there's five episodes. Hard Knocks follows one team during training camp every single year, and you get five episodes of what I think is just pure awesomeness. I think it's the closest thing to how showing the correct portrayal of how life is in the NFL through the lens of HBO. And the producer, the executive producer, Ken Rogers, is phenomenal. I just think the music's, I think the editing, I think they capture a lot of the essence of what kind of goes on in real life in the NFL. And so I've, of course, been watching these last two episodes. There's two episodes. Of course, the this year's team has been the Oakland Raiders.
Yep.
And it's just been so far, I thought episode one was okay. This last Tuesday's episode, the second episode, I thought picked up a little bit. But what you see in these Hard Knocks, okay, you see true, like, portrayal of coaches and players. I mean, it captures them, I think, in the most accurate kind of way. And sometimes it really can make coaches look really good. And players look really good. And I think, but more times than not, it can make these guys look like buffoons.
Like Hugh Jackson last year?
Oh, okay. And before that, it was,
we had Joe Philbin with the Miami Dolphins
Joe Philbin
one year.
Was, in the word, you never want to be called meek as a man, you know? But Joe Philbin, God bless you, man. You talk about someone who is just meek. But Hugh Jackson, way over his head. I think Rex Ryan was like, okay, but it kind of showed his buffoonery a little bit too. But John Gruden, who's of course the head coach of the Oakland Raiders last year in his first year of a 10-year contract worth $100 million. And I'll never forget, Mark Davis in his press conference said to everyone, this is a big effing deal. I will tell you, this is going to be the biggest joke of a contract.
Thank you.
That you will ever see, maybe ever given, handed out to a coach. The second episode, John Gruden is addressing his team. And there was just the way he addresses his team made me almost throw up in my mouth and know that the Raiders will not be contending for the AFC title anytime soon. Take a listen real quick.
In 6 days, hit the light, will you? In 6 days, let's hear it for Bobby, hit the light. In 6 days, the NFC champion Rams are coming in here. The Rams were a bad football team 2 years ago. Where were they last year? They were in a Super Bowl. They put their mind into it. They put their heart into it. They believed in it, and they got there. That's why I'm a pain in the ass. We can do anything we want to do. We got enough. We got good players. We got a couple really great players in here. We are the who. And it's time for us to wake up as a football team. We got...
All right, so here's...
It just goes on and on. Oh, I'm with you on this.
We got a couple really great players in here.
That's what I want to focus on. Thank you, Jimmy, is we got a couple great players in here. So you got 90 guys in there trying to get a job in the NFL and excel and you know, realize their dreams. And he's sitting there talking about two great players. Can you guess who those two players might be that he's referencing as two great players?
Yeah, Antonio Brown is definitely one of them, yep. I would think. Does he want to make a case for Derek Carr?
There you go. Ugh. Big Jim, that's it. So it's Derek Carr and Antonio Brown. Two great players that we got. If you watch these the last two Hard Knocks, it makes those two guys look moronic. I mean, we all know that Antonio Brown is going off the deep end, but there's something about Derek Carr and his ability to lead that just, I mean, it has me shaking my head. This guy is he's just not a natural-born leader. You can see it. I used to, when I would get a chance to talk about Derek Carr in the old show down in Houston, I would squirm. This guy used to tweet out all the time, Raider Nation, don't worry. My long-term contract is coming. You know, it's like, oh, Derek, we were also worried about you getting your long-term deal, bro. I mean, I don't know how I'm sleeping at night. Just there's a douche factor that just trying to just is so a tribute to this guy. So Hard Knocks is doing no favors for John Gruden, doing no favors for Derek Carr, doing no favors for Antonio Brown. And I'm here to say if anybody thought that the Raiders were going to be the next great thing now that John Gruden is there, you're sorely mistaken. You don't identify two guys that to me aren't maybe natural leaders as your greatest players. That's just it's coaching 101. And then the tonality, a lot of his delivery is very, very kind of and I love the person as a human being. Very Pete Carroll-esque, if you will.
This is Gruden.
A lot of Gruden. Back to Gruden. And you guys will tune out to that. If you want to connect with players, don't rah-rah sell me. That stuff, you know where that works?
College.
Thank you. It works in college. It does not work in the pros. So just watching these last two episodes, I can tell the Raiders are none closer to competing in the AFC as they've ever been.
I'm with you on this. I thought Gruden was going to be in over his head from day one. He's been too far removed from the game. And now watching these first two episodes, like you, like these speeches, I'm certainly not an ex-pro like you. I don't know how you just don't have douche chills watching this, because I know I do. And I just want someone to stand up in that room like the late, great comedian Patrice O'Neill and just yell, man, you corny. Like he's just so corny.
Yes.
McCarthy, what do you got?
All right, so it feels to me like the Red Sox are quietly starting a little, just a teensy little smear campaign against Mookie Betts. Not like a full-blown Larry Lucchino smear campaign, but just a tiny one. I read this from The Athletic this week. Peter Grammons, currently writing for The Athletic. Quote, if Mookie Betts wants to stay in Boston, we'll pay him, said one Red Sox official. We want him to be the face of the franchise, but it's hard to know he's rejected our outreach in the past. Unquote. My question to you is this. What outreach? What outreach? That comment is so disingenuous from the Red Sox. Like, your outreach? You offered this guy 5 years for $100 million after he nearly won the MVP in 2016. You took him to arbitration the year before he won the MVP last year to haggle over $3 million. That's outreach? That's a legitimate contract offer that you're extending to Mookie Betts to try and keep him here? There's been this whole discussion that, you know, okay, well, we don't know if Mookie Betts wants to stay here. And, hey, you know, that might be true. That might be totally true. I don't know. None of us really know. But for the Red Sox to act like, well, we've offered him contracts and he doesn't want to be here, that's so disingenuous. Because the few contracts that the Red Sox have reportedly offered Betts have been borderline insulting. 5 for $100 after the guy nearly won the MVP at the age of 24 years old. Give me a break. 8 for $200 last year after he won the MVP when he's got $350 million waiting for him 2 years down the line. Absolutely insulting. This is so disingenuous for the Red Sox. It's almost like they're going to trade him this offseason and they're starting to try and pin it on him. Like, he doesn't want to be here. We offered him contracts. What contracts did you offer him? Not exactly legitimate offers from the Red Sox. Maybe he doesn't want to be here. That's fine. We don't know that. But it takes two sides to make a deal, and the Red Sox aren't holding up their end of the bargain on this one.
We talked about it in the Baseball Reporters last night because this thing was just kind of snuck in there by Peter Gammons in this column. And it's, McCarthy, you're old enough to know. This is Red Sox media manipulation 101.
Of course it is.
This is, hey, when we have to trade him, don't look at us. We've gone to the table with Mookie Betts. What do you want us to do? It's not our fault. He wanted to leave. We wanted him to be the face of the franchise, but our hands were tied. Yeah.
What were we going to do? I don't know. Offer him a fair market deal?
Right, don't lowball him.
Right, exactly. Don't insult this guy at every single turn. Maybe he doesn't want to be here. Why don't you find out? Find out for real. This offseason, you either need to offer him that 10-year, $340 million contract, that fair level deal for him, or you trade him. It's really that simple.
And Matthew, I mean, how many former AL MVPs have ever been traded away from their teams?
I'd have to go back and look.
I mean, you mentioned that before. I think you said like zero. Like there's,
it doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen.
And
AL MVP being traded from their team before their contract expired. You've already done research. Well, I know.
So
for
Alex
fact,
Rodriguez comes to mind, 2003. Put it this way: it doesn't happen, but it doesn't happen with big market teams like the Red Sox. Right. And if it does happen, it's a team like the Texas Rangers being like, "Oh wait, oh crap, we owe this guy $250 million over the next few years. Like we got to get out of this."
By the way, a side note on that contract, just totally random. I'll never forget when that contract came down. I know exactly where I was. I was at Smithfield, Rhode Island in training camp. I don't know, 97, 98. I can't remember, 99 when he signed that deal. I just remember that going through the locker room, like everybody talking about Alex Rodriguez, $250 million contract for the Texas Rangers, and everybody being like, and it's guaranteed money. I mean, I just remember that being a contract that we all talked about in the locker room. That contract.
Well, it was unfathomable at the time.
It was.
And now that number would be a slap in the face to guys like Mookie Betts, which is insane. All right, it's an agenda-free Friday. So to you, we will go right after the break, and I will have my opening take as well on the Bruins. We'll get to that next here on Agenda-Free Friday with Felger and Maz.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, Tommy, my pick, Tom Curran. I think the next head coach of the New England Patriots is Mike Vrabel. What do you say?
I don't think so. I really don't. I think that the next head coach is a defensive coach, and I think he is actually in the building right now, and I think it's going to be Gerard Mayo. When you look at all the things that Mayo brings to the table, the fact that he will coach under Belichick as opposed to what Vrabel did, his business acumen, his time that he spent in the professional business world with Optum, the things that he knows, he's an incredibly charismatic person. Not to say Mike Vrabel isn't those things, not to say Mike Vrabel wouldn't be a good candidate, but I really have a feeling that when it's all said and done, if Gerard Mayo wants to coach the New England Patriots after Bill Belichick, that might be something that the Crafts would like to see happen.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub, and it's agenda-free Friday.
January.
Ted Johnson, that's Gary Tanguay and Tom Curran, both of NBC Sports Boston, talking about future head coach of the New England Patriots. Tanger says Mike Vrabel. Tom Curran says it's Gerard Mayo. Mm. Feels fast, Ted. It's just been the preseason here and camp and one preseason game, and just like that, Gerard Mayo is going to be the next head coach of the Patriots after Bill Belichick.
Yeah, I was doing the show live with Tom Curran when he dropped the little bomb. I got to counter his what he threw out there, but I was shocked to hear him say that. I mean, Gerard Mayo just got there, and I don't know Gerard well. The times I met him and everything I've ever heard about him, he's a great guy. I mean, I'd love to get to know him a little bit better, but there's just certain things that you scratch your head a little bit. I mean, coaching the NFL, he's never done before, so it's a huge adjustment for him just to kind of just ingratiate himself into the lifestyle of the NFL. So he's not even proven yet as a coach. I mean, he's been there literally 5 weeks. I know the defense has looked phenomenal, but the defense, to a point, it almost runs itself because of how many veterans they have on that side of the ball. So and I know he was hired late in the process, too. I don't know. I mean, Gray Schiano was originally hired as the defensive coordinator. He was fired on March 28th. And then we found you guys did some digging yesterday and found out that Gerard Mayo was officially hired on the 27th, so the day before Gray Schiano was decided to step.
Yeah, it's
step
like Schiano
down.
Saw the writing on the wall.
Yeah, but was that the thinking, bringing Gerard Mayo in as the kind of as the guy that was going to be calling the plays, even though you had Gray Schiano who was entitled your defensive coordinator? That was shocking to me. But if that's the case, Bill doesn't show his I would say love or favoritism to too many guys. And he certainly has a shine for Gerard Mayo, which good for him. I just think that's a huge, huge, huge kind of leap, if you will, by Tom Curran to suggest that he's going to be the next head coach when he's coaching middle linebackers right now and has only been on the job for about 2 months. So I was a little bit surprised to hear that. That's interesting. I don't know if he was just going to throw that out there if he wasn't told by somebody in the organization to maybe kind of put that out there. So I find that to be interesting. And the first thing I thought of, Big Jim, was this to send a message to somebody on the staff? Was this a message to somebody on the staff. Did the Patriots want Tom Curran to leak that for anybody in particular? And if you can, you guys think of maybe who I might be referring to?
Who are you getting now?
Josh McDaniels. Josh McDaniels, what seems to happen every single season around here?
He has the dance with other teams.
Every single year, there's something about Josh McDaniels being courted or interest shown by XYZ team after about weeks 8, 9, 10, 11, when you kind of see what's going on with each team in the NFL and you kind of know what you got, and there's coaches on the hot seat, his name inevitably always seems to pop up. And there's got to be a point where there's just like enough of that. I'm just curious if that name was thrown out there to send a message to one Josh McDaniels, because every single, it seems like midseason of these last 3 or 4 years here with the Patriots, Josh McDaniels' name is being floated out there. When I sit there and I think, it's like he doesn't really have any real strong desire to leave these cozy confines of Foxborough, really, but he loves having his name out there. I wonder if the Patriots are a little like, okay, I'm enough with that, Josh. Why don't you just settle down here? We're going to throw this out there just to take your stinger out, if you will.
Rock in Boston, you're first up here on an agenda-free Friday. What do you make of the potential of Gerard Mayo being the future Patriots head coach?
I wouldn't have a problem with it at all. I mean, a lot of these coaches need to get an opportunity. And, you know, Jim, I got a question for you. I'm not sure if you know how many minority GMs are in the league, but there's only one. So the opportunity is going to be far and slim for anyone of African-American descent in most cases. And case in point, Steve Wilkes got a raw deal last year, and I feel bad for a situation like that. But you got to give people an opportunity just to see what they can do. Ted, I'm not sure, but he has played in the league, so he does have some type of acumen to understand players. I think he gets his points across, and I think he's going to be an excellent coach if that's the case. Yeah. That's my take.
Thanks, Brock.
No, I hope so. It's just I've never seen anybody on a faster track. It's unprecedented. I'm just being honest. I've never seen anybody on a faster track to a head coach.
I hadn't even considered it.
No. Gerard Mayo. That's my only point. Everything I've ever heard about him, smart, charismatic, relates with players. Those are all great qualities to have in a head coach. But you know,
for the job Brian Flores did here last year,
it's a lot harder job than people think.
Right?
Him
getting that gig with Miami was deserved. He had also put in the sweat equity to get that job. For Gerard Mayo to be talking about as a head coach of this franchise after one preseason game and one training camp, I kind of think is nuts. You know, so maybe he's on the fast track and maybe he'll get there. It just seems real, real early to be talking about that.
I'm borderline shocked that we think he might even be calling plays this year. I mean, this guy's only coached football, and listen, I know he played in the league and he's a really bright guy. We all know that he's a very personable guy. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he were on the fast track, but hell, just calling plays this year. I mean, we didn't even know if Brian Flores would be capable of that at this time last year. And Brian Flores had been on staff for what, 10, 15 years. I mean, Pepper Johnson was here for like forever, right, Ted?
He never got anointed D coordinator.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So for, somebody who was here and was clearly respected, I mean, it certainly seemed like from the outside looking in, he never got his shot. Now Gerard Mayo is going to get it, like walking in the door after 2 months. It's weird. It's strange.
And with all due respect to the caller, I get what you're saying. He played in the NFL, so you got to, like, there's a lot of guys that have played a long time and had long careers in the NFL, but you do not want them coaching your football team. So look, anybody did play a position where you got to be really smart and know what the hell you're doing, and I would say have to have a high football acumen to be good in that defense and to run that defense. However, having said that, playing football and coaching and running a team is night and day different. There is absolutely no carryover, in my opinion.
Pete in Delaware, want to talk about Hard Knocks. That was your opening take, talking about that show, Ted. Go ahead, Pete.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Good, man.
Hey, Teddy, I was laughing when you were talking about Hard Knocks because, my appearance with Gruden, my feeling is I knew Gruden was going to be a bad coach again and horrible. The fact that his backup quarterbacks is Mike Glennon and Nate Peterman, who he brought in for Derek Carr, who, as you guys know, is often hurt. That's your backup plan? That's horrendous. And the only good thing I got out of week two of Hard Knocks was the fact that I didn't know Brent Musburger was going to be the call doing the radio for the Raiders. And I'm like, Brent, you were a legend. What the hell are you doing?
I think he's been their play-by-play guy for a little while now. Yeah, so did you see the production meeting? It was big Lincoln Kennedy. Remember Lincoln?
Great. He was a moose.
Big left tackle for the Raiders for a long time, stud. And he was doing the color. Brent Musburger was doing the play-by-play. And Gruden kind of geeked out when he saw him. So yeah, I think he's been the play-by-play guy for the Raiders for a little while now, which is kind of cool.
Let's go to Frank in Marshfield on John Gruden on Hard Knocks. Hey, Frank.
Hey, how you doing? I think that was the ghost of Brent Musburger. But no, anyway, Teddy, it's nice to have you on the radio back in Boston. I enjoyed you on the field, and you're great on the radio.
Thank you.
Speaking of Hard Knocks, it's great because of Gruden's such a tool. And the thing I've noticed are the first two episodes, any chance they get, they put Antonio Brown on a pedestal. Oh, wait till he gets here. Oh, we got fast receivers, but wait till he gets here. Oh, wait till... And he's not even there. Like, you can't do that if you want to run a winning, successful organization. Put one or two guys above the whole team. They're constantly talking about how good and how great it's going to be when he gets here. And it's just ridiculous, you know?
It's I couldn't agree more. When you're constantly, just like the caller just said, Jeff, when you put these guys up on a pedestal, you better be damn sure they're respected, that guys will follow them, that they lead by example, that they set the kind of tone for everything. You're not putting guys on a pedestal that are flaky.
Burn their feet in a cryogenic therapy session in France.
Right.
That paint their helmet, their old helmet, because they refuse to adapt and use the new helmet like everybody else has to.
It's shocking to me that coaches haven't figured that out over all this time, that they continue. I know, but
well, you know, talent trumps trouble in that league.
But it's... It shouldn't. It should be the one league, though, Jim, that you should be smart. It's more about the collective gathering, you know, the collective guys, the group that you have. There's a collective psychology that you have to kind of, this puzzle that you have to put together, that is so much more important than one individual player. And it's just at the end of the day, if he's somebody that won't play along or buy in, it's not worth it. It's just not worth it at the end of the day. I don't care how talented you are.
Gino in Weymouth wants to talk about Patrick Mahomes, quarterback of the Chiefs. Hey, Gino.
Hey, guys. So I called Maz about this a couple weeks ago, and he took this as in I was saying Pat Mahomes like is terrible. I never said that. I think he's an amazing talent and is going to be probably a Hall of Fame quarterback, if we're being honest. But teams are going to have tendency, like going to recognize his tendencies and going to know what he likes and what he doesn't like to do. And he also made throws last year, like no look, halfway across the field, switching from one hand to the other. Like, do you really think that's going to happen again? Like, I think he's amazing, but I think he's not immune to a sophomore slump like we're all acting like he is. So,
Gino, I'm with you on this, and the guy who's normally in this chair, Mike Felger, feels the same way. He was talking about how he thinks there's going to be some kind of market correction with the Kansas City Chiefs this year, whether it's an injury to Mahomes, a sophomore slump, like Gino just said. I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked. Like, he was phenomenal, and he's been great since he came into the league. Obviously saw a little bit of time in his rookie year towards the end of the Chiefs season there. I think it was maybe one game he got in because it was just like, you know, garbage time of their season then. And then, you know, the worthy MVP last year. Mm. But would you be really shocked if teams did pick up on his tendencies and he had like a little bit of a drop this year?
Typically, I would say yes, but there's something different about this kid.
Okay.
I'm a buyer in this kid. I watched his tape when he was with Texas Tech. He was a great player then. I just don't see it. I see an Andy Reid who knows offense and is one of the more exciting offenses that you'll, I think, see in the NFL. They do so much with play action and deception that it makes the game easier for a guy like Patrick Mahomes. I'm feeling like, I mean, I know they got Akeem Hunt is now gone. Tyreek Hill, he didn't get suspended. So he's, you know, he's still got his weapon with
Travis Kelce as well.
They still have a ton of weapons on offense. I just don't see it. I think this kid's the real deal. He grew up with a dad that played Major League Baseball. He knows how to be a pro. He just seems to get it. You know, I don't see him being marketed everywhere after this great breakout season he had. He seems to be laying low, keeping his focus on football, and I think that's going to benefit him.
All right. Well, they're certainly the biggest threat to the Patriots in the AFC. Coming up later, I want to get your thoughts on who might be a sneaky team to look out for in the conference. And also, I do have a Bruins thought. Charlie McAvoy and Brandon Carlo haven't been extended. David Backes and his bloated contract, still here. So I ask you, the Bruins fans, what grade would you give the Bruins offseason? Because ESPN, behind their paywall, gave it a grade. I think you're going to be stunned to hear what it is. I want to get to that and comment on that after the Sports Hub headlines here with Matt McCarthy, and then to you here on Agenda Free Friday.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub.
Sports Hub.
Felger and Maz, 98.5 A Sports Hub, simulcast NBC Sports Boston, Agenda Free Friday. Jim Murray, Ted Johnson, Matt McCarthy, and you at 617-779-0985. Got a couple open lines for you. So I wanted to touch on this. I'm like one of 13 idiots who still subscribes to ESPN, the magazine. And with that comes access to get content behind their paywall online. And occasionally that content's actually pretty good, informative, interesting. Mm-hmm. Certainly helps in terms of stuff to talk about on this show. And we're 2 months from training camps, like about 2 months away from training camps in the NHL opening up. And I've been sort of starved for content for the Bruins. And I saw this column from Greg Wyshynski, Puck Daddy of ESPN, behind their paywall, NHL offseason grades. How all 31 teams did in 2019 free agency. It's like, okay, let's see what they grade the Bruins. And before I give you the grade, Greg writes, "The Eastern Conference champs are usually more about the in-season tweaks than the off-season impacts. And when they do dive into the unrestricted free agent pool, sometimes they come back to the surface with a David Backes contract. They added forward Par Lindholm from the Jets on a low-cost two-year deal and forward Brett Ritchie from Dallas on a one-year contract. This latter being a classic change of scenery pickup that could help their fourth line. Bruins also did some housekeeping, in inking defenseman Connor Clifton for pennies, 3 years, $3 million total, and have more to do with restricted free agents Charlie McAvoy, Brandon Carlo, and Danton Heinen. They let forwards Marcus Johansson and Noel Achari walk to add to their $10.1 million in cap space." Wyshynski. I mean, he just throws that in there like, oh, they got more to do with RFAs, Charlie McAvoy and Brandon Carlo. What grade, let me ask you both first, what grade would you give the Bruins offseason?
I'd give them a solid D.
Matt?
That's strong. I would give them an F, a straight up F.
He gave them a B. F.
What?
F. 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 The Bruins offseason's been an F. Why is David Backes still here? David Backes, love you. And what you and your wife do for dogs, I mean it. I like the signing at the time. Contract seemed a little bloated, but now you got to go. They got to get that money off the books if they have to attach the first round pick on it to get him out of here, to add more money so you can actually sign two of your most important building blocks going forward in Charlie McAvoy and Brandon Carlo. Do it. Do it. Bye. Bye. Gotta go. Why is he still here? Why is he still here? And with Carlo and McAvoy, why are your two most important players not signed to long-term deals yet? Because Backes is still here. F. The offseason for the Bruins has been a giant F. 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 B. B. And this is this whole column. So then I was like, well, what other teams? What? The lowest grade he gave was like a D plus to the Ottawa Senators, who were tanking in a complete disaster. A D plus? No, F. No. F. If you give them a Z, give the Ottawa Senators a Z, but the Bruins a B, you've got to be kidding me. What a joke. So I should probably cancel my subscription to ESPN, the magazine. I'm an idiot enough for even having it at this
point.
Yeah,
you are.
Because if this is the kind of content I'm now getting, this kind of stuff behind the paywall, foolish. B, my ass. F. F.
And actually, they do have Danton Heinen, and they signed him up, which now probably prevents them from inking at least one of those long-term contracts, at least for now, until they clear some money off the books some way, somehow. And once again, if you're going to be the general manager of the year, Jim, shouldn't you be able to get that type of money off the books? Shouldn't you be able to do whatever you possibly can within your power to get that money off the books? Because I kind of feel like Don Sweeney looks at that Backes contract and just says, well, there's really nothing I can do about it. Yes, you need to do anything you possibly can to get that money off the books. I don't care if it's a first-round pick. Yeah. I don't care if it's a first and a prospect. You need to get that money off the books because the window is closing on the Bergeron, Krejci, Marchand, Chara core. All right? You're not going to get many more kicks at the can at this thing. You need to free up as much money as possible, get those two defensemen signed up, and, I don't know, actually improve your second line for once, which is something you still have not done in the 4 or 5 years you've been general manager here. You have not improved that line, and you are not in a position to improve that line because you can't figure out a way to find some team that needs to get to the salary floor or something to take David Backes off the books. You need to do that, and he hasn't done it, and it blows my mind.
So this is the problem sometimes with the national writers, and this you see this throughout like the NBA season. As much as I like Charles Barkley and that crew, like I don't know, they'll just
him do NCAA.
Well, you know, they'll just throw out like random comments because they'll read a little bit about a team before they go on the air.
Oh,
and
gotcha,
Greg Wyshynski's
gotcha.
Case, and like he's done always a really good job, but like unless you're here in the day to day and really paying attention to teams inside and out, like you just don't know. To give them a B, that's completely asinine. Like, were you drunk when you wrote this column? A B for the Bruins offseason? You got to be kidding me. Nick and Marshfield, what do you think?
Oh, my. It's F for frickin' joke. This offseason is bad for the entire league. You have guys like Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine and Brayden Point all still unsigned. You know, 2 weeks ago, Ted, you said that, you know, you'd be kind of hesitant to give McAvoy a long-term deal just because of his injuries. I agree with you. But you still don't have enough money with your remaining cap space to even give him a bridge deal. Because a bridge deal, he's going to want like at least $5 million. And I think after that, he's going to want $7 to $8 million. It's a freaking joke what this offseason has been for Don Sweeney, GM of the year. My ass.
Go back to Jay and Carver with a Bruins thought. Jay, what do you think of this grade? A B for the Bruins offseason.
Yeah, it's a little generous. I go F. F. Sweeney's holding on to these first-round picks when he takes guys he can get in the second round. Just attach the pick and move out the cap space.
Yeah, Jay, thanks for the call on this. I don't know what they're waiting for in David Backes. Like, it's
you're going to have to just swallow that pill. You have to give draft picks up.
You're going to have to.
Yeah, just do it.
You know, the contract's too bloated. He's too old. And credit to him. Yeah. I mean, towards the end of the season, he was doing whatever he could do to try to get, you know, make sure he was in the lineup almost on a night-to-night basis. And that, you know, that meant it turned him into a goon. And great, you know, like credit to him. But at this point, like, you got to go, man. You got to get that money off the books so you can sign these kids long-term. Yeah. But no. And okay, maybe I'm being a little bit premature in my freaking out about this. But again, we're getting close to camp opening up. It feels like that horrible Game 7 just happened, because it kind of did, at least in my mind. Like, We got to figure this out here, because there's been, you know, some talk of Carlo and McAvoy holding out of camp, and then it's time to panic.
Yeah, the big time, because our defense, I mean, let's face it, Char is just not the player he used to be, right? And so your defense needs those two young guys back there. And here's the thing: when you go to they had a phenomenal season last year, but they just couldn't finish it at home. Game 7, of course. That is a huge, huge hangover for this team. It's just going to affect them. Psychologically.
Yeah. Not feeling great about that either.
You need to have – when you see a season like they had, which there was so much emotion, they exceeded expectations, they had a couple series that went the distance. It was physical. It was just draining. And you don't do much of anything to change up the roster of any real significance in the offseason. You're asking for trouble. You need to bring young and talent, new guys in here. And the Backes, who is not even, he's a bit player. He's a role player. I mean, he doesn't even dress for every game.
Scott,
you got to get rid of him.
Scott in Pennsylvania on David Backes. Go ahead, Scott.
Hey, Jim. I enjoy the chat on the Bruins. I have a question for you. The seventh game of the finals last year, do you think they should address Backes?
No, at that point, no, because he was too slow. I don't know. I mean, I know you're maybe looking for the toughness and someone to maybe get in front and get a greasy goal, something like that. Like, he had proven his ability to do that before, even during that playoff run. But for Game 7, I don't know. I didn't even consider that.
Would that have made a difference?
No.
You lost 4-1, okay, and Kuhlman gave you something in Game 6. You go with the hot hand at that point. Like, you put David Backes out there, what, is he going to rah-rah the guys after Brad Marchand allowed that goal and just totally crush their season at the end of the first period? Like, what difference would he have made? Nothing.
Yeah.
And David's got how many more years on this contract?
Two, I think.
Two more years at six mil?
Yeah, two more years at six mil.
Gotta go. Yeah, love what you and your wife do with the dogs. It's a great thing. I mean, if anyone that, you know, tries to help the animals, I'm all for you. But, you know, you're not helping the team. The contract's bloated. You're screwing up their cap. You gotta go, David. Bad. Ship them off. Attach a first-round pick if you have to.
And it was David Backes that actually had a talk with the coach, right, mid-season about
With Bruce Cassidy. Whatever you needed to do.
How can I find myself a role on this team? $6 million a year, and he's asking where he can fit in. You know, that's tough.
Well, Ted, I want to get your thoughts on who might be a sneaky team to watch for in the AFC. I don't know if it's anybody at this point, because guess what, guys? Another day without games, really, like real games being played.
Patriots and got better.
Yeah, more flies are dropping. There was a big injury in the AFC, and that may alter that picture that happened today at camp. We'll tell you about that, and I want to get Ted's thoughts on who might be a sneaky team to watch for in the AFC. We talked about this yesterday on Felgram Maz. We'll get to that in our long commercial-free segment coming up next with your phone calls at 617-779-0985.
Felger and Maz.
Wow.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I know everyone's had their questions about Andrew and that sort of thing, but I really feel, you know, very confident that he's going to, you know, find his way through this thing. I think, you know, after Durant thing and everything, everyone's there on the side of caution, but quite frankly, this is not even in the Achilles tendon. It's, you know, in another area. It's a bone, you know, I'm not good at these things, but it's called, like, you know, something else. It's a small little bone.
You know, I'm not a good rememberer or talker type guy. It's like a mo bone.
That's Colts owner Jim Irsay on with the SiriusXM NFL Radio earlier this week. Felger and Maz, Agenda Free Friday. It's 98.5, a sports hub. Jim Murray and Ted Johnson.
He doesn't give a bleep, man. I'm just going to go. I'm in a certain state of mind right now, and I'm just going to go on national radio and start spewing my thoughts. I'm not sure that's a good idea, Jim.
Yeah,
you sure you want to do that? I miss those late night tweets that he'd go. He used to just be, 2, 3, 4 in the morning. Some of the tweets he used to send out, he's kind of pulled back on that. Someone's got in his ear and said, Hey, Jim, I don't think it's a good idea if you tweet after midnight. Probably not the smartest thing.
I'm going to buy the original napkin that they wrote the lyrics to Sgt. Pepper's on.
Yeah, probably not. My guess, it's probably not good to call into a radio show or to tweet when you're in a Percocet haze. But, hey, who's to say?
Right.
But he's talking about Andrew Luck, Colts quarterback, who has this weird, mysterious injury that I feel like we also kind of figured out here on this show, here on Felger and Maz earlier this week when he said the mo bone. Through some quick Googling, it was Marshall Hook that deduced he's probably talking about, and I'm going to butcher this, Andrew Luck developing myositis ossificans. Either way, it sounds like it's the thing that ultimately ended Cam Neely's career is when your muscle becomes ossified. It almost turns to bone, which is horrifying. And if Andrew Luck has this in his ankle or shin, like, that's real problematic. And problematic for the league, and I'm someone that loves the league anyway. Obviously, I'm Patriots first, but I like the league. I'm one of these guys that actually likes a bad Titans-Jags game on a Thursday night, Ted.
I'm with you, brother.
But I think the league's success and the tune-in factor also hinges on their quarterback staying healthy. And Andrew Luck bounced back last year, felt like they were a year ahead, and they're one of these teams that could make the league, A, more interesting, and certainly make the AFC more interesting for the Patriots. You know, they drafted well, they have maybe the best offensive line in the game, they got that Darius Leonard, the linebacker who looks like a stud, and Luck looked like he was back. Now if he's dealing with this, well, you can check them off. That's the team you probably don't have to worry about. And now there's this. This is Mike and I were talking about this.
Just keep on coming.
Oh my God, we were talking about this earlier in the week. You don't even have to play the games, and the Patriots by default are still going to end up the class of the AFC time after time after time.
These are big right here, man.
This one's huge.
There's two actually, but go ahead.
Okay, so this one, the bigger of the two that I'm looking at here, LA Chargers safety Derwin James, who looks like a special player, like really, you know, versatile, great defender, great safety. Derwin James could miss significant time with a stress fracture in his right foot. And you had said you've had one of these injuries before. You're talking like 10, 11 weeks?
It's 10 weeks minimum. It's he fractured the fifth metatarsal on his right foot. I did the fifth metatarsal in game one against the Buffalo Bills in 2003 on my left foot, and I missed the next 10 weeks. So they put a screw in there. There's two options. You can either not operate, and hopefully the bone will heal on its own, or you can put a screw in there and try and speed up the process with the healing, and that's what I opted to do. I was out 10 weeks, so to me, this is a minimum 10 week injury.
And so the leading
tackler for the Chargers last year, Derwin James, safety.
Yeah, Derwin James. And so just like that, the Chargers defense takes a massive hit. Big you time. Also have Melvin Gordon, their running back, holding out, so he's willing to miss games. I'm also reading now that their wide receiver Keenan Allen is going to have ankle surgery, so he's going to probably miss the rest of the preseason. So, again, you don't have to play the games, and the Patriots are just going to fall out of bed and win 11, 12 games, and I'm sure most of you are pumped about this. But, again, I like the league when it's healthy and, you know, you actually have good competition. What was the other one you were mentioning? Was it Keenan Allen?
It was Avery Williams. Yeah. He's the middle linebacker signal caller for the Jets. Tore his ACL. He was, along with Derwin James for his respective team, for the Jets, was also the leading tackler on his team. So a very key, important cog on that defense. And the Jets are kind of one of those teams that I think, okay, you know, I'm not a big believer in Adam Gase, but let's see what he does. I mean, he's got some new toys on offense with Le'Veon Bell going there. And I'm a believer, even though I think there's a bit of a douche factor with Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator. I think guys respond to him. And I think he can actually coach. I think he can coach defense, and I think he can rally his guys. So I just thought that was a nice kind of a hiring for the Jets to bring in Greg Williams because guys respond to him. And so I just thought overall that team was going to be better than it's been in the past.
Yeah.
I really think
so. So Avery Williams, torn ACL out for the season. That's a linebacker of the Jets. But is that your sneaky pick in the AFC? Because that's what Felger said yesterday. He believes in the Jets that they might, you know, get the sixth seed, squeak into the playoffs, and might – be problematic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was – look, I mean, I don't know if the LA Chargers are the sneaky team. I mean, look, they won 12 games last year, so they're probably not. But if I had to look at the AFC, I would probably say the New York Jets. I'm a big fan of Sam Darnold.
Me too.
I liked his game coming out of USC. I thought for the most part he hung in there last year. He survived. It wasn't always pretty, but he flashed at times. And I think Le'Veon Bell, that's for a guy like Sam Darnold, that's a huge, huge weapon to have at your disposal. We know he's probably the best pass-catching running back in the NFL. And then I think with the defense that they had that's stacked, the Avery Williams injury is a big one. But having said that, I just think the Jets could win possibly 9.
That's where I'm at.
You know, games and still – you know, I think the AFC is going to be pretty. It's going to be the Patriots and then a lot of other teams. So I just think there's teams that can maybe get in the playoffs with 9 wins. And I think maybe the Jets can be one of those teams.
Jack and Canton on the Patriots. You're next here on an Agenda Free Friday. Hey, Jack. Jackie. Hello, Jack. How the hell with you then?
Defining moment.
Mine yesterday, I said the Jacksonville Jaguars, which Mike, you know, of course, just busted my balls, saying, like, well, that's not big of a surprise. They were 5-11 last year, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, they regressed after going to the AFC Championship game, giving the Patriots a game in 2017. And I believe in that defense. I think they have studs up and down the roster on that side of the ball. Mm-hmm. And granted, they came back down to earth a little bit last year, but that unit with Ramsey and Ngakoue, Bouye, Darius, like, there's a lot of talent defensively there. I think they can get back to being a top 5 unit in the league. Nick Foles is their new quarterback. He's certainly better than Blake Bortles, so you can upgrade there. His new offensive coordinator was his quarterback coach when he was with the Philadelphia Eagles when they unfortunately beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, so that helps them. And Leonard Fournette, I don't know, like, he should be healthier. I think him and the rest of the a-holes, like Ramsey, who I like, but an outspoken a-hole, it feels like they were humbled by last season, so I'd like to think they go into the season looking for something to prove. So I think the Jags could win 10 games and, you know, squeak in.
I mean, potentially. It all hinges on Nick Foles. I just don't think there's a lot of buy-in with Doug Marrone. I think they've tuned that guy out. So Doug Marrone, I just think, is a head coach that – players aren't really responding to in that locker room. But look, that defense, they just roll that. There's not a more talented defense at all three levels than the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, they are stacked at all three levels. The offense has been their Achilles heel, and I think coaching has been their Achilles heel. So maybe the quarterback will, Nick Foles will go in there, and if he plays like he did when he filled in there in Philadelphia, okay, maybe. So, and it's funny that none of us picked the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns, who a lot of people think has got one of the better rosters in the AFC. You kind of look at what's going on. The new head coach seemed like it was a guy that Baker Mayfield loved, that it was more about his relationship with Baker Mayfield. That's why he was appointed the head coaching job. It just sounds like when he talks, I cringe every time Freddie Kitchens talks. There's one of those things.
I mean, he's never even been a coordinator.
And if I'm a player, am I buying into what Freddie Kitchens is selling? When he talks, nothing he says makes me feel like that's a guy I want to go run through a wall for. So I think that could be an utter disaster. Don't forget they traded for Odell Beckham this offseason.
Yep.
So
they bring in Kareem Hunt, who's going to be suspended for the first 8.
You haven't heard a lot from him so far at the beginning of training camp, but it's only a matter of time before he, you know, loses his stack.
Yeah, it's a lot of big, volatile personalities with Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr. for a first-year head coach. That could be problematic. I love Mayfield. I think he's a stud. I think he's got a real future in the league.
Totally
There's the whole Cleveland Browns factor, too. Like, there's just the, I don't know, institutional stink that comes off that franchise, whether the old or the new one, which is now 20 years old. I don't know. And I never...
Franchise that hasn't been able to get out of its own way, man.
How many times...
The owner's a buffoon.
How many times have we seen the preseason darling fall on its face? Like, last year was the Minnesota Vikings. Coming out of the NFC Championship game, they add Kirk Cousins, so it's the upgraded quarterback, and, you know, the defense is stacked, and Mike Zimmer's building something, and they basically finish 500. Kirk Cousins is, well, Kirk Cousins, and they suck. And there's just... They were so hyped before last season. It just feels the same. To me, that's what's going to happen with the Cleveland Browns. I hope I'm wrong. It'd be great if they were, you know, good. It'd be, you know, I think, wildly entertaining because they're stacked on both sides of the ball. But if they went 6-10, would you be shocked?
No, not at all. I'd like to see just more teams in the AFC try and give the Patriots more competition, whether it's the Colts with Andrew Luck, whether it's the Browns with Baker Mayfield, whether it's the Jets with Sam Darnold. Can one of these teams actually be a legitimate, you know, contender with the Patriots in the AFC, man? It'd be fun to see more challengers in the AFC than we've seen in recent years.
It's a long commercial-free segment here. Got one open line. You want to join us here on an Agenda-Free Friday. We'll get right to your calls. And I want McTakey, I want your thoughts on who might be a sneaky AFC contender as well. After your headlines, 90 seconds here with Matt McCarthy, and right to your calls on an Agenda-Free Friday on Felger and Mass.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.